Thank you, Mike, for a very informative and practical approach to sound recording. We're now moving into a different digital aspect of digital preservation. Peter Fornaro, would you please come up?
Good morning, everybody. I would like to speak about a system which is doing digital archiving of any kind of digital data on photographic material. And the nice thing about this is that it is more or less migrationless. Well, if we look at digital data, then we can say there are some facts. First, digital data is actually quite good for digital archiving because you can copy it without any loss if you check that you don't have any loss. You can use error correction mechanisms, which is also a very nice thing. You can store digital data on very different kind of medias, and nature shows that it works. If you look at DNA, which is actually a digital code, not a binary one, but a 2-bit code, then it is working. And we and many different species are still alive due to migration. Of course, there are some challenges. Data carrier age with time. This is the thing we hear the most. CDs which age, magnetic tape which is getting old. Hardware is getting obsolete very fast. We have short life cycles in IT because, of course, they want to sell new stuff, and data formats change. And this quote you know for sure. And today, maybe we could say both of those things are true. They may last forever or 5 years. It just depends how much money you have to spend for it. This is another interesting number. It's actually the size of the digital universe as of the year of 2008. It's not just audiovisual data, it's just everything which is out there, which is expected to be out there. And actually the interesting thing is that it is said that about 3% of this amount of data is somehow worth to be stored for a longer time, basically. And this is another interesting thing. At Google, they have said that every minute, 13 hours of video are uploaded on YouTube, which is quite a challenging thing to store those different kind of movies because of mine or yours would be deleted just due to a selection process. It would not be that nice. And this is another interesting thing, which just shows that this digital revolution finally is completed. By late 2008 or early 2009, have been sold more mobile phones which are capable to take a picture than all the cameras sold in the entire history of photography before. And there are, these are also the analog and digital cameras. And then this is another thing which is maybe special and not something which is typical for IT, because actually, to really archive data is a job which you don't know how long you have to do it. It might be just a couple of years if you have to do something for compliance, or it might be very long. And if the job has been done right, you will only know after you have watched the content. So, but now let's step back a little bit. What is it about? It's about digital data. And what is digital data? Actually, digital data is nothing else than just a well-specified number of symbols which you can use to describe an information. And also our alphabet we use to write words is actually digital data because it's a well-defined set of characters we use to write things. Binary data is just a special situation of digital data. It's just the situation where you only have two different characters you use to describe something. Of course, the codes will get longer like this, but the advantage, it is very simple to be processed by computers because semiconductors, transistors, they like binary data. And now if we look to a book, then you see that a book actually is nothing else than a storage for digital information. There are written words on it, written with digital signs, actually a well-defined character set, and it's somehow lasting quite long. It can last for hundreds of years. As we know, we have the experience that it works. And the question is, why is this working, and why is causing binary information, which is just a specified set of digital data, causing that much problems? And then we were thinking in the framework of a research project whether it would be possible to actually transfer the positive aspects of a book, written words on paper, into the computer technology. And yes, we have to say it is possible. You can use something which is a visible data carrier, like punched tape. Of course, it's a part of computer history. Photographic material, for example, or any other. And you have to choose somehow a format, a data format, which is widespread, which is well documented, so that you can say there is a quite big a chance to have the possibility to read it back somewhere in future. And you need an access hardware. And the nice thing, if you have a visual content, you don't need a machinery to read it back. You just need your eyes, in the case of human beings, and the book. And you need a camera or a scanner, which of course is somehow technology, but base technology, in the case of, for example, photographic material. And then we have chosen the best three of those different possibilities. And we have chosen photographic material. We have also chosen, in the case of that photographic material, micrographic film. We have chosen those specified, well-specified and widespread data formats to be used to describe the content you would like to store. And we have used the visual interface to actually have the possibility to read back the data stored on this photographic film. And here you see how this works. We have any content. It could be any bitstream, any kind of data, audio, video, text, whatever. And it is encoded and recorded and written onto photographic material. In this case, it's a microfiche. It can also be 35mm micrographic film. It can be 35mm perforated film. It doesn't matter, actually. And down here, you see what happens. In a file, you have a bitstream, zeros and ones, which the computer likes. And those zeros and ones are converted into white dots and black dots and white gaps. And those are written to photographic material. The machinery you use to do this is also something which is standard equipment. We have machinery in the micrographic area. We have also machinery from the movie cinema industry. And those machines are used to actually generate the archival storage film, let's say like this. So what's on this film? And I think this is the big advantage, which is a very big difference to a magnetic tape or any other storage carrier. We have here the actual content, the digital binary content, but also we have the very important meta information also on the same data carrier. We have here, for example, an image, if you like this, just to preview somehow the content. Of course, if it is music, it could be something like an image of the accompanist or whatever. You have here metadata which describes the content so that you have the context of it. And back here, you have actually the description how the information is stored on this film so that you have in future the possibility to understand by yourself how to read it back. This is the most important part, of course, besides of this, just the meta information to understand what is this. I mean, of course, if you would find a couple of centuries from now such a film and see there are some dots on it, you would maybe know that there is something, but what is it? That's the important stuff. The readback process is quite similar. You have the digital film, you then scan it and decode it, and what you get back is the original bitstream. To decode it, it sounds somehow very sophisticated, but it's actually not. What you just have to do, or what it is worth to be done, is that you don't just, let's see on this thing, that you don't just write white, black, just besides each other. It's better if you somehow distribute those dots a little bit, because if you have dust or scratches, not too much data is destroyed. Of course, you also apply error correction in this method. And the nice thing is, it's not actually said which kind of machine you have to use to write back, to read back. You just need a scanner or an image machinery to scan or take a picture of a photographic film. And of course, there are different machines, you know, from the movie cinema industry, like scanners from Arri, or here in Orflight, or this is the machine which is used in micrographic area from Zeutschel, or other machines like down here. And the nice thing is, it's like a change of a paradigm. The technology change then will be our advance, because if those machines get better and cheaper, it's just even simpler to read back the data on the film. And what do you do if there would be the case that no such machine is on the market available in a couple of years? Then we also did a test and said maybe it's possible to just build such a machine out of standard equipment, let's say out of just a digital industrial camera, a light box. Here you see one using LEDs, red, green, blue LEDs, very narrow bandwidth LEDs, to just separate the three color channels, which somehow represent three different layers of storage on color photographic material. Now, the interesting thing is, yes, there has been a time before magnetic recording, as we know it today. And in the 60s, IBM built a machine, and they focused on photographic material to be used as a binary storage. They made a quite big machine, but it was able in the late 60s to store 1 terabit of data. And you see here, that was the size of it. I think they sold 4 or 5 of those. And here you see the film material, and those are some like tracks and the binary information on it. Unfortunately, in those days, it was more important to have fast, cheap, and high storage capacity systems. And so with getting with magnetic recording getting better and better, this idea somehow was lost until now. Now, digital data and film archives. Well, digital data have a lot of advantages. Just think about searching, finding, distribution of it. And the problem, of course, is that today you have to migrate. And the migration process is something which is extremely, extremely expensive. And I'm not thinking about storage media itself. They are actually for free even today. But if you look just at the graph like this, then you have energy which you use. I mean, if you have ever been in a server room, you know, there are computers heating up the air, you need a big air conditioning system, you need electricity for the systems itself. Then you need to migrate the hardware, but actually you don't have added value, because if you migrate, you just get a new machine which is storing the old data. You have premises and you have stuff. And of course, it's very difficult to say what this will cost in future, but somehow I think it won't be much cheaper than today. I think it's more realistic that it will get more expensive. And it's also very interesting, if you ask people how expensive is digital archiving, then if you ask big companies which do this service, then you will get typically a price like this, and they are smart. They tell you what is the price in euros per gigabyte and month. So it sounds quite cheap, quite inexpensive. But if you calculate the price for a terabyte per year, it's quite a sum. And the bad thing, it's not just once. You pay this every year. Just think about a service contract you have to do for a big system, for a big system you use to store those data. And if you calculate then how much money you have to spend over, let's say, a decade or 2 decades, it's just quite a lot. And it's continuing like this. Of course, there are solutions. One solution is that you reduce the volume. Do selection. Use data compression. Use a method which you don't have to do migration. That's what we are talking here. Or, of course, stay analog. And both approaches, the stay analog one and the migration-less approach, is displayed here. One, you know, it's color separation. You just use a black and white film to do color separation, to store actually each color channel for itself on a stable material. And then after a couple of years, you do a reconstruction of it. But of course, this is quite challenging just for the color question. And the other thing is, why don't you use bits on film and just store the binary information as it is without going to the true analog world? And the question is, which approach now is better, to stay digital or do something analog? And now there is an interesting thing. I said before that digital data is something like written words or something, or zeros and ones. But if we go down one step down to the real data carrier, like a magnetic tape or even the photographic film, then there is nothing like digital data. It's always analog. What you just do is you try to define somehow different levels of signal strength, where you say, where you have a decision process, and where you say this means a zero and this means a one. The only true digital or binary methods in nature are molecules, like in the DNA, or in quantum physics, the spins of the electrons. So if we now can say there is not a big difference between analog and digital, then it should be somehow easily possible to apply the same theory to check how good the quality could be. And this is what we try to do. And the theory we used is quite old, and you maybe know it. It's based on the theory of Shannon's information theory. And there are, from those days where the optical film has been researched on to be used as a digital storage, there are very interesting papers. One is from Sean, and he actually researched on this material to find somehow the absolute information content you can put onto photographic material. What you see here is just an equation, but it's not that difficult. The I here means how much information do you get onto a film. It's bit per square square inch, also it's centimeter, but centimeters, but it doesn't matter. Then you have here somehow the properties of the film material, the MTF, so it means somehow the sharpness of the film, and here the MTF, or the quality of the machinery you used to create the information on the film. And down here we have the noise gain. Just for an explanation, what means this MTF? Well, actually there are different explanations or definitions for the sharpness experiments you can do with photographic film. One is modulation transfer function, one is called spectral frequency response, and the third point spread function. And actually they all three mean the same. It's actually an experiment where you test photographic material or optics or whatever else, an audio system, to just find out how much or how high frequencies are you able to store or to transmit with this material. And here, in the case of photographic film, you just see the different examples, how this is working. Here you see actually the experiment which is done. You just make line pairs. That's also the definition. You know how much line pairs per millimeter you can write onto a film, which means you increase the frequency of black and white lines, or in this case it's a sinus function. And if you have now a real material, you will lose in contrast. And this contrast, this loss in contrast, it's defined how much residual contrast do you want or do you need to have the possibility to somehow be able to see the different black and white lines on the material. And then you do a graph of this. You see here the cycles per millimeters. The cycles are those down here. And then you just define, for example, at 10%, 50%, what is the maximum frequency you can store on this material. And make it short, the better the ability to reproduce high frequencies, the sharper the film or the optics. So this is one of the properties you have to put into this equation. The other signal-to-noise ratio, you are certainly comfortable with this. There is a simple demonstration of what this means on photographic material. It's actually this. You have grain. And if you would like to have a signal on this photographic material, you can imagine it as this square here, which has a lower intensity on this image and a higher intensity on this image. And of course, the stronger the graininess, or let's say the noise, on this photographic material, the more difficult it will be if the signal is just very small. In this case, it's very difficult to recognize something here. In this case, it's very easy. And so if you use now those properties of photographic material, it's very interesting that you just get a number which is limiting the information content which you can store on this material. It's really bits on film per square centimeter. And the interesting thing, it doesn't matter whether what you store is an image, binary data, or actually text, which is also digital information, just in a higher alphabet than binary. And if you do an experiment with text or binary code, you will get nearly the same limits regarding to information density on this material. And so now, if we have this theory, and if we are able to say, yeah, it's the same whether we put an image directly onto the film or if we write binary data onto the film, we can use the same properties and define the same limits. It's possible to actually define the information content of a film just by using those properties. And if we take now different line pairs and different noise levels of photographic material, we will get a number of megabytes per frame. For example, full aperture on a 35 millimeter film. And the interesting thing is this number is very, very small. So it means on photographic material used like in film industry, we have here somehow 270 kilobytes. It's not megabytes. Here 405 kilobytes, and if you go into the micrographic area, you will be able on a full app frame on film, micrographic film, be able to store 810 kilobytes of information, also netto information, on this film, or if you use some holographic material, it can go up to 1 megabyte. So what is the conclusion of this? And this is very interesting. To records image on film, color or separation, it actually doesn't matter. In the case of color film, you just have dyes instead of silver halide, which is generating silver particles, has to be regarded as an analog lossy data compression. So if you write images, really images, onto a film and scan it back, you do compress your data, lossy compression. And the interesting thing is that this lossy compression, even in this analog, you can absolutely compare this with the loss you get from, for example, JPEG 2000 or another lossy compression method, which is based on mathematical theories. And so it means that if you write binary data onto the film, and the interesting thing here is if you go binary, this limit of the information content on film per area is a little bit higher than if you go analog or with different density levels, then you will have actually the same film stock or amount of film stock you use to write a JPEG 2000 compressed bitstream as bits on film than if you would go with analog. The nice thing here is if you want to increase the quality, which is if you go analog, is impossible, you just take 1.5 times, 2 times, 3 times more film amount and just reduce a little bit the compression strength you applied to your original data stream. And this means, finally, even if you go analog, and even if you do a 4K scan of an image and you generate a 43 megabyte film or image file, there is not that much information in it. And the interesting thing is, in the microscopy area, there is a name for this. It's called the empty magnification. You just generate data without content. And that's a very, very interesting point. Of course, there are other advantages. If you stay binary and if you really store binary information on film material, color reproduction is no more an issue. If you have a well-defined color space in your original data stream and you write your data onto the film, you don't have to care about just calibrating your scanner, calibrating your color management system afterwards. You just get what you had and nothing else. Completely the same. if you do a checksum and if you check this, you will get a bit equal data stream afterwards. Of course, you can apply error correction. Dust is it's not there anymore, because even if you scan it, you can calculate it away just automatically by error correction. If you have images, you need more or less complicated approaches like digital eyes or whatever. It's fully reproducible. If you scan it twice, you won't get different results. It will always be the same because you just get a bitstream. And sound and metadata can be easily included, or you can just apply such a method, for example, for audio. Actually, audio is quite something which is perfectly usable on a system like this. About the costs, of course, it's not a cheap approach. And the main issue why this is not a cheap approach is just, I mean, you have to generate or you have to write the bitstream onto the film, and you have to read it back. You have to immediately read it back and verify that what you have written is really there. You have to calculate, check some of it. And the prices in film industry for recording onto film and scanning back are just quite high. So this results into costs of about 100,000 euros per terabyte. But there is another interesting thing. You just pay this once, and afterwards you just have film material, which even if it ages, it has not directly an influence to the readability of the bit information you have stored on it, because even if dyes do fade a little bit, binary information is still binary information. It doesn't matter. How does the process work? Of course, you have here the data, and then you make somehow the data preparation, which means you have to separate your metadata you want to store onto film. You have to transfer it to a somehow called a certified service provider. It actually is just a film lab, which has a film recorder. Then there you write it onto the film, record it, validate it, and then the film has to go to the archive. If you want to recover, you then do the following. You have a disaster or a breakdown of your information system. You scan the films, you decode it, you do a validation, you do a transfer, and then you can do the application. And the very interesting thing is, we did a lot of scanning projects for photo archives. And typically, there was no possibility to make an insurance for this binary information, which is stored somewhere on a server. But this is only true for Switzerland. In Switzerland, now we have found an insurance which is also insuring what you have on the film. So they pay you if you have once to read back the data. The infrastructure for reading back, as I mentioned, scanners like here, sorry, that's a recorder, or a scanner like here. And the interesting thing is there as well, the sooner or later cinema will become fully filmless, which means those machines which are used for digital post-production, so you still capture the film on film material, then you scan it, and after you did the post-production and before projection, you write it back onto film. This process will be obsolete the sooner or later, and then, of course, it's very interesting to have new volumes to just use those machines in the labs which do recording and scanning. So what are the features at the glance? It's of course something which is robust and durable. It's somehow cost transparent, because you know what you pay today, but you also know that the costs are quite low in future. The interesting thing is the authenticity down here. Film, photographic material cannot be changed anymore. It's just there. It's irreversible, not like a magnetic tape. And of course, there are many different applications, not just audiovisual content like compliance. If you have to store something for a certain time, of course, long-term archiving, objects of high value, or just consumer market. And right now, we have done two research projects on this. The first has been called PEVIAR. It was somehow just a basic research about how much information do you get onto film. Then we did a second project which was called Monolith. It's actually how to make out of something a product which was successful. And the third thing and third actually now running project is called PVR 2. It's a PVR 2. It's actually about how to make metadata and binary information, or how to write it onto the film so that it gets somehow self-explaining, so that you look at it and you understand, yes, there is something, and that you, without a lot of side information, you know what to do with this data to get the content back. And if you like, I have some of those films with me. I can give you one, and then you can try it by yourself. Just put it on a scanner, and then you get a PDF with a question which you can answer, and send me an email whether it worked or not. Thank you very much.